The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to The Lawyer's Edge, a program that seeks to answer your questions on civil, criminal, constitutional, and political legal matters with attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty. Robert J. Slama is a U.S. veteran and prominent attorney who has served as counsel for some of Jacksonville's most high-profile cases. Robert Slama is a member of the Florida Bar and the U.S. Supreme Court Bar Associations. He's argued cases in Florida, as well as constitutional cases, before the highest court in the land. David Trotty is a Florida Bar attorney, practicing since 2000, and is a certified civil and family law mediator and a qualified arbitrator in the state of Florida. His practice focuses on family and criminal law issues and mediation. He's a former Marine who served in Japan and the U.S. Embassy in Austria and Tanzania. Also a federal police officer with the Central Intelligence Agency. It's now time to discuss today's legal topics and issues and how they impact your family and small business. Now, live from the WBOB studios, here's attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty.
Good afternoon, Jacksonville, and welcome again to another edition of The Lawyer's Edge. I'm in the studio with David Trotty, and we want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas. Roger, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas.
Did you have a good time?
You know what? Pretty good time, yes.
And pretty good. That's kind of a qualified my Christmas was okay thing.
It could have been a little better. I didn't see one of my daughters, but, you know, I guess that's life.
California daughter?
Yeah, something like that.
That happens. And David, how was yours?
We had an Italian Christmas. It was wonderful.
Okay. What's an Italian Christmas?
I see the tree with little jalapenos or little, you know, peppers and stuff on it. What did you do?
And now we had a meatballs.
We had meatballs
for our Christmas dinner. It was wonderful.
Okay.
Oh my gosh! So you hung meatballs on the tree? What else did you do?
No, we didn't hang meatballs, but we had meatballs and pasta.
Probably
and
ate them.
We had Italian sausages.
They were delicious, probably, right?
Delicious.
So you have an edible tree?
Not really. Not edible tree now.
Well, let me ask you this coming into today. By the way, please call in at 222-TALK, 222-TALK. And for those of you who want to ask some questions privately, please feel free to use our email. Mine is rjslamalaw@gmail.com. David, what's your email?
David@dptrottylaw.com. That's David, P as in Paul, trottylaw.com.
And if you have questions, by the way, feel free to run the questions in and give a couple of shout-outs. I love when I hear from viewers who say they listen from all over because we're live streaming. So wherever you are, you could be in Alaska, you can be anywhere. Mia in Orlando. Mia, she's a realtor, by the way. If you need help in Winter Park, give Mia a call, Mia Brown. Anyway, for today, I want to talk a little bit, if we can, about something probably near and dear to most of our hearts. I know Roger, every year, he starts thinking about his New Year's resolution somewhere around, what, Thanksgiving?
Usually after Christmas, to be frank with you, when they drop the ball at around midnight on New Year's Eve, that's probably when I'm thinking, okay, I need to take this seriously.
Okay, so you're a disappointment. David, how about you?
I actually started thinking about my New Year's resolutions probably around October.
Really?
That soon, you know, it's my birth month and I turn my birth year October 16th. So I started thinking about what did I not do the past 10 months that I wanted to do the first 10 months of the year. And usually it's health-centered, organizational-minded, and or how to be a better father.
Wow. And by the way, I did not pay him to give that answer that came right off the cuff. No, when you say that, and what I find is probably around the last quarter, many of you who own your own business, you know you start doing year-end planning. So someone like you, it kind of forces you. But you're a Marine and in the CIA and all this stuff, so you're a very organized, maybe slightly OCD person, no?
It's terrible. I have some compulsive tendencies.
So does Roger, except he doesn't do the New Year's thing until the last minute. I don't know how that factors
in. If at all. I've started to give up, to be frank with you.
Well, you know, even more disappointing.
I try to stop my company from running and I'll say loosely stop it from running for the last 2 weeks of the year, meaning I try not to set appointments. I try not to set new clients coming in, new consults. I try not to set hearings, but my office is fully functional those last 2 weeks, meaning I'm shutting down the previous year's files. I'm opening up new files. Now, with the influx of electronics and electronic filing and stuff like that, we're not shutting down paper files and recreating new paper files, so it's a little faster. But what I found this year is the week before Christmas, I had six mediations scheduled, and none of the six mediations really went easily. They all settled, I think all but one, but they all were long mediations. And then I had these clients that came in that had emergency situations, which we talked last show, you know, time sharing and senior kids isn't really deemed an emergency as long as the kids are in safe hands with the other parent. But I had a lot of those big issues come up last week and are kind of falling into this week as well. But I think I have a quieter week scheduled the week between Christmas and New Year's. So we'll see what I can get done organizational-wise.
Now, for those of you who like Covey, and probably many of you who are a little bit older, I don't know how Covey is received among the folks that are younger in business today. Back around the 90s, Stephen Covey, he was the deal. He came out with a number of books, but beginning with books about how to think about time, how to prioritize time. And he was, in many respects, revolutionary. And I know it sounds kind of maybe trite to some people, but he helped you think about time organization. And part of his strategy was what he calls first things first. So my question initially is, and I'm just getting want everyone to start thinking about this, if we're getting to questions like New Year's resolutions, what does it tell us about how we're functioning, say, daily, monthly, weekly, in terms of goal setting, in terms of moving ahead with plans, organization? He would break down your day. This is what Stephen would say. The unit of time is not a week. It's not a day. It's the month. What's in the month? Everything. You have to figure out things like time, which goes in first, such as little things like sharpening your saw, as he would call it. That was fitness, as you said. Work. And then other activities, other things. So what he would say is when David Trotty gets to the end of the month, because he's thought about the month as a whole, he's put everything in. When you get to the end of the month, it shouldn't be a surprise what happened. The only thing it doesn't account for is emergencies, which, as we know, emergencies are going to come. So anyway, that was kind of his model. David, how do you go about planning and organizing and thinking about your New Year's resolutions and what you want to accomplish?
Well, what I do is I typically look back at the last year, what I added to my calendar, what confusion was added to my calendar. I call it self-inflicted wounds, packing your time in the time spaces that you don't have. And I look at see what was profitable. I'm not talking about monetarily profitable, but spiritually, time with my son, time with the business, and what I can afford my clients and quality of service. So then I look backwards and I go forward. And like you said, you break it down month to month because you can start in the big picture. You have your bills that are due monthly. So you go from your bills, you go from the time frame, you see what's due in your business, what deadlines you have. So you have those hard markers during your month. So from there, I look at all the things that I added this past year and do I want to keep those additional burdens that might not be profitable to me spiritually, physically, or as a family? And I decide whether I want to put them in or take them out.
And did you read Covey or did you come up with this on your own?
I don't even know who Stephen Covey is.
Merry Christmas. Too funny. But you know, what you just said, and the reason I wanted to get some of that out and use this model is, after we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about now something that I think a lot of people have to add into their calendar is legal goal setting. Why? A lot of our issues and things that are on your plate require you to go through the legal storm. Call us at 222-TALK. David and I are in the studio. Call us 222-TALK.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Welcome back to The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama and David Trotty, attorneys at law, and here talking about legal goal setting this hour. Does the average person, you think, need to make legal goal setting, Robert?
Not only do they are, but okay. Let me explain what I mean.
Okay.
It goes like this. As you're getting ready, Teresa, as you know, Teresa Ross and such, when we used to sit around, she was very big at thinking about her New Year's resolutions. And she would always ask me, what is your New Year's resolution? And my answer was kind of, it's ongoing. To me, it's not like I get to January and I go, oh my God, you know, there's something magical about this line between December 31st and January 1st that all of a sudden, poof, I turn into a pumpkin.
Yeah.
It's monthly, weekly, as you're going through this process, is how do you capture within 30 days, 31 days, the goals you're trying to set and the things you're trying to do? For me, for example, I had death in the past 2 years when my dad died, working on my mother. And what tends to happen, and this is a lot of people out there, not just me, it's a lot of people out there. You've gone through divorce, you've been hit with probably medical illness, financial issues, and your whole life has kind of come apart. So here's the person I'm first speaking to. You were goal setting, like David Trotty, and then all of a sudden these events came and you went from proactive to completely reactive. And you're saying, how do I put these pieces and what I call the building blocks back in my life so you can come and start moving again proactively? That's one type of person.
Okay.
So I'm speaking to you first, and then we're going to get to the kind of the Trotties of the world and kind of how do you shuffle into your deck certain things, make decisions, including legal things you've been putting off. Because the Trotties of the world who do this kind of methodically have the same problem as the person I just described. It's this. One is fear-driven. The other is, I call it's, now I'm going to come back to our good friend Covey, which is why I mentioned him, first things first. In other words, if you're continuing with your deep schedule and your regular schedule, then you start looking at this legal stuff, which you know is going to divest you of your time because you don't have control over it. I always say it's like building a house, right?
Well, no one ever anticipates being attacked, whether it's a divorce, whether it's a death and you have to deal with a probate issue, whether you're involved in an accident and you have to defend a case, or maybe you were the person that was in the accident and you're the plaintiff in the case.
Labor law, getting fired, laid off.
Getting fired, getting laid off, discrimination case. I mean, and there's a plethora of issues out there that no one, I don't think, starts January 1 says, you know what, I think about February 12th, I'm gonna have a legal issue, and let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's what happens. But I do think that you can prepare for legal issues, and I think number one that every probably thinks about is probate. Are your affairs, are your personal affairs ready? Do you have your will? Do you have a trust? Do you have your deeds in place? And every year I say, I'm going to do my will. Guess what I don't have as a lawyer?
David, we're all the mechanic driving a wreck. But no, let me explain what I meant, though, because your point is well taken. It's this. You've been separated for 2 years. And everyone, you've heard this. And I'm just using this as an example. Some have credit card debt that you haven't resolved. It's been charged off. And you're hanging out. And I hear this all the time. What are you waiting on? I'm waiting for them to come to the door and sue me. I go, really? Do you realize the opportunity you have now to take this thing, which is a fear, which has you kind of in bondage, because it does. It's chains. All the stuff I'm talking about, it's chains. But you're waiting to pop the cork. So for some, it's magical. As New Year is the time to get it straight.
Well, you're talking about financial planning. And you're talking about some of the people, unfortunately, a lot of people, especially after the Christmas season, holiday season, they realize how much they've overspent sometimes. It does happen out there still. And you're talking about planning. And what do you do? Do you let this monkey hang out in your backpack for another year? I had an unfortunate conversation with a young man last week, and we were talking about refinancing a car so he can get the debt in his name so he can start building his own credit. Because at the point, or right now, he's not really helping himself by building his own credit. He's relying on parents. And so we were talking about that, and he says, well, I really can't – I don't think I'm going to get financed. I said, why? Because I have a credit card debt out there. I'm like, what credit card? You never told me about a credit card debt. No, we're not talking about my son. He's only 14.
You'd be surprised.
You glanced at Roger. I wasn't sure if it was Roger.
Dominic, yeah. You got something to tell me?
Yeah. My little girl had a Visa, and this is back when it was not common at all. She had a Visa card when she was 12. My wife set her up with a Visa debit card, and we were at the Target, and she rips out her Visa card. And the cashier said, do you have any ID? She showed her a middle school ID and said she'd never seen anyone that young with a Visa card.
Well, that's a little different. I like that idea.
Yeah.
It does show fiscal responsibility
exactly.
to our young people as long as it's properly managed and overseen by the parents. But let me get back to this young man. So he was telling me, and this is mid-20s, so he's a young man. And I says, so tell me about this credit card debt. He goes, well, I don't know where to send the payments. And as you look at me like a deer in headlights, Robert, I said, have you called them? Yeah, they give me a number and no one answers. No, I'm in my late 40s. I don't know. Every time I try to call a debt collector or a credit card company, I get somebody on the phone pretty quick. Oh, you want to give me some money? Here's where you send it to. So, but it's amazing how many people out there don't realize the burdens that they're shouldering. And there are ways to plan, legally plan, your future to get out of those or maneuver yourself or figure out a way to pay them and have a path of success. And one of those paths of success is planning, get with an attorney, and figure out which path is the best path for you.
And you know what's funny, David? Every time I talk to someone, and usually when they come in the midst of crisis, after they talk about it and we're able to dissect it in certain ways that we're kind of, in other words, when I say dissect it, coming up with different roadmaps or plans to resolve it, you probably hear the same thing I do. Oh, I feel so much better. My answer is, I could have made you feel a lot better for a lot less about 2 years ago. Now that you've waited, I can still make you feel better, but maybe the surgery is going to be a little bit more involved and a little bit more costly because
right.
you've either tried it yourself, which I see about now 25 to 30% of the time, it'll be something like this. A guy just came in my office a week or two ago needing exceptions done. I said, exceptions, that means you went to a hearing. How'd it go? Not real well. I said, well, actually, let me just be blunt with you. If you can do what I can do after 26 years clerking for four judges and having a whole lot of experience, I have to sue someone because I've been defrauded. I mean that. If you can do what I can do, I've been badly defrauded. So as I tell people, it's one thing to go online with YouTube and look up how to take a door out of a car. To put a mirror in, which I just did. And trust me, it wasn't a whole lot of fun to replace a side view mirror because you got to take the whole door apart. Now, which engineer came up with that plan? I don't know. But they need to go back and look at that. But if I mess up, it's a screw or a nut. In the law, as I started breaking it down for him, he filed the wrong pleading and got an answer. So many of you would say, oh, well, you're just filing a new pleading. Yeah, there's the problem. Say, this is where we get into the higher level math. A good attorney will pick up on the use offensively of factual findings and something else that may be detrimental to your new cause of action, even though it stems from the other. So you have what we call under a Supreme Court case called blunder tongue. Half the attorneys in town wouldn't know the case. It deals with using collateral estoppel offensively for issues that have been fully, fairly, finally litigated. Now, that's the legal jargon. Here's what it breaks down to. There's no way on the planet Earth he could know that. But if he runs into the right attorney, now he goes to file the new thing, and they jump out and go, your income, it's already been fully, fairly, finally litigated. Judge, from that thing he filed that he shouldn't have filed, that he didn't know what he was doing, but it's unfortunate for him because you proceed at your own peril, which is the rule. Buyer beware, caveat emptor. We do it in business every day of the week, right? It happens in law. I'm going to use those factual findings and say, here's what you determined her income to be. This is what you determined his income to be. He wants to modify alimony. Guess what? He's stuck. Now, Then the judge says, but wait a minute. That was a termination. This is a modification. Judge, here's Blundertop. Same identity of the parties, same issues. The issues that were fully, fairly, finally litigated and 3Fs apply. This is what has been decided by you. What are you going to do? Come in today and change it? And you just decided it a month ago? That's why Blundertongue is there. What it basically says is, at some point, all litigation must be final. It's got to come to an end. So what am I saying? The point here is, what you don't know not only can hurt you, I'm looking at this guy going, I don't know who's going to answer on the other side when I file my modification. Could have cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars in alimony at a time when now I'll make the situation worse. He's coming up for retirement. So here's what the real question is. Who gets the benefit of the $100,000? She or him? She's working, has two jobs. He has one job. And he wants to retire at 67. He may be in a whole mess, and she may not only have two retirements, certainly one, plus Social Security, plus his alimony, which she can sock away. You getting the point?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, TH in the Army, I don't know about the Marines, but I love what we used to teach, and they still teach. Stop, period. Think, period. Act, period. What I find happens, it happens when we're dealing with new recruits, right? You put them on the live fire range. You put them on the confidence course, what do you see? Fear starts to take over the body. I've seen grown guys trying to go up on the confidence course come to a stop and hold on, crying. And I had to crawl around them. This was going on the slide for life. It was a 150-foot tower. He was afraid to get up there and then slide down like everybody else did. Fear paralyzes. So where I'm going with this is, there's a lot of people hearing me, and they're looking for reasons to talk around the issue. And what's the issue? They're afraid. They're afraid to get in the ring, so they'll say, well, it's the money. It's my time. It's the dog. It's I'm waiting for her. I'm waiting for him.
But,
right?
Right. But
so what do we do?
Well, now that we all have our yellow pads out and we're taking notes and trying to figure out the roadmap that you're laying out for us, in short, you're saying...
Fear finally in...
It doesn't matter if you don't get over fear. It doesn't matter.
But we need to be prepared if these legal matters come before us. The first stop is go see an attorney.
Bingo.
And if you can't afford an attorney, at least go see an attorney, seek competent advice, even if it costs you a consultation fee. There's a lot of attorneys out there that don't charge consultation fees. A lot do. That's to avoid legal shopping, and I understand why they do. But shop it around, get good advice, and then determine whether or not you need to go forward with an attorney. I always say, he who represents himself has a fool for a client. That goes for attorneys and laypersons alike.
It does. Call us at 222-TALK, 222-TALK. We're interested in your questions. We are here today. We are here. We're in the studio. We're here for you, trying to help you work through this, what I call the paralysis of decision-making.
Let me ask you, Robert, talking about legal planning, let's say in 2018, I want to move to Virginia. And how do I move to Virginia? If I need to plan for this trip to Virginia and I want to move with my son, and no, I'm not moving with my son, to Virginia, what do I do? And that, is that determinative of whether I have a divorce case, I'm already divorced, or almost if I'm in a paternity action and I'm the female with the child and there's no paternity established? Let's talk about that when we get back.
Oh, absolutely. And see, there are issues that are in your future that haven't come yet. And there are issues in your past which have already been in your life, and now it's time to take them and it's time to figure out what to do with them. First is, make your plan, but you got to get through the fear of paralysis. How do you get through it? David just hit it on the head. You do it by coming in, seeing an attorney, sitting down, coming up with a plan, and you'll figure out, just like the doctor, oftentimes the surgery is not necessary. What's necessary is just a smart plan. You're listening to A Lawyer's Edge with David Trotty and Robert Slama. Call us at 222-TALK. That's 222-TALK. Call us.
You are listening to The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama and David Trotty, and in the studios with us here on this day after Christmas. So call in if you've got a legal question at all at 904-222-TALK, 904-222-8255. And you can ask away any legal matter at all. They'll be happy to help you this afternoon here on WBOB.
Or email. You can email it as well, rjslamalaw@gmail.com. And David?
It's david@dptrottylaw.com.
Now, David's question, just before we get into relocation, I think we were getting into relocation from before, but let me just say one thing. For those of you who have been hit, trust me, I've been hit. Do you know what it was like after I lost my dad, and here I am for years helping people in catastrophic cases? I mean catastrophic. Had a guy represented once, 49 years old, went into a Solantic, went in for pain, just so we could get back to work. This guy could lift 400 pounds, deadlift, bench, all that stuff. He ends up getting a shot in the back that ends up making him a paraplegic at 49. Life changed just like that. A shot that never should have been performed, like a facet injection, something like that. Whether he was trying to do some kind of nerve block, whatever it was, changed a life. Well, there's an attorney in town, Grady, that I would refer people to handle and help with the estate side while we're handling the personal injury or the med-mal side. Here I am, my dad, healthy as a horse, all of a sudden, goes in, starts with pain in October with his back. By December 18th, he's dead. And on December 24th, we're at a funeral. We can't even get a priest from a church we've been at since 1971. There's no room in the inn for him, so we had to have the funeral in the funeral home. Right after that, then my mom starts having issues, declining, and now we needed to have her set up. And here I am. All the advice I'd given, all the issues, my whole life, my planning, everything medical for myself, as all of you that are listening who've been through this know, it all goes out the window. You don't have a plan. You're sleeping with your cell phone. You're waiting for the text going off in the middle of the night saying something bad just happened. There's no planning. You get behind in every area of your life. So for some of you, those of you who were there, the first step is come see someone, lay it all out, and let them help you and get organized. Don't try to organize it yourself. Try to figure out, you know, with them a priority list on things to do. Because the ones that are in the legal arena, you don't have control over like you think. It isn't when should I address it? The time is now. So for those folks, I think the first step is make your list of everything else you think you want to do, starting to get replugged into your life, but start making a list you got to get with an attorney. I think that's the smartest and the fastest way to start moving through some of those issues.
Absolutely.
And like in David's list, and just using kind of the David approach, as you're going through your list and you have issues, it can be pre-divorce, post-divorce, right? Post-divorce, and you were starting to hit on it. Say that, David, we're sitting around. I'm sitting around with my wife or whoever, and I want to go to North Carolina. I'm thinking, wow, you know, we just went on vacation in North Carolina. This girl I'm dating, she's got, say, friends, family, everything in North Carolina. So she says, despite, say, that person having two or three kids, all of whom are here, and let's say the time sharing is 60-40, and says, why don't we pick up and go to North Carolina? It'll be great for us. It's a new start. New start. Great words, right? You won't have to deal with all the crazy clowns that are left in Jacksonville. Trust me, there's a few of them. We can get to North Carolina. We can start over. There's just one small problem. How are you going to get out of here, right?
It's a big question.
It's not a small problem, though, is it?
It's a big, big problem.
So what do you do? Where do you start? Now, what do I do with all those plans? I don't know what to tell my employer. I don't know what to tell her. I don't know what comes of this relationship. I don't know what happens to my kids. And then...
Well, here's what you don't do.
What do I do?
Let's start with what you don't do, which comes to our office at least once or twice a week in my office. We get calls regarding relocation. Hey, I found a great job up in North Carolina. I signed a lease. And I'm moving next week. Are you married? No. Are you divorced? Yes. You have any kids? Yes. You got a problem, buddy. Because what happened is you put the cart before the horse. If you are planning, whether it's with a significant other or not, if you're planning to move the area more than 50 miles, that's as the crow flies, you need to stop. You need to plan this out. Maybe the other parent involved doesn't care. It's totally fine with you relocating. But before you breach that subject with the other parent, you need to figure out what the law prescribes, what you can do, what you can't do, And that is determinative of where you are at in the legal system. Are you even in the legal system yet? So, Robert, let's kind of go with what you had. You're divorced, not Robert yourself, but the client you're talking to is divorced, and they have a 60-40 split, and you have found new love, and you want to move to North Carolina. And you come into, or they come into your office. What's the first thing you have to do? What type of notification do you have to give to the other party?
Statutory notice. And what I generally do is, first we sit down, we look at what, I always ask them, what's the plan for moving?
Now, the statutory notice you're referring to is is the Florida statutes.
Right.
And they prescribe a certain way, certain type font, certain way of delivery that you have to notify the other spouse and basically ask them for their permission to relocate to North Carolina. That's what you mean by statutory notice, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And included in that, you're kind of giving a plan, because there's costs, right? If I'm going to go to North Carolina, what happens to the visitation schedule? Now, if you're the, it's usually easier if you're not the majority time-sharing parent to make that move. Someone's got to absorb the costs. I can tell you that the person living in Jacksonville, the mindset is always the same. It doesn't change whether it's a man or a woman. If you left, why am I going to drive halfway to meet you? It gets even worse if you say, okay, well, I'll drive all the way down and then you drive all the way back. And their answer is, you left. Why am I doing this at all? So, and the cost of it. Then you have child support, and then someone wants more money for gas and all this other stuff. So there's always a ripple. There's always something, even if you're the non-majority time-sharing. If you're the majority time-sharing parent, you have all those issues, plus you have to add a few more in. What visitation does so-and-so get now? It's not, and it's not that easy just to say, well, make it up in the summer. His answer is, I already had half the summer.
Now we can go
through all those.
To infinity and beyond, to quote Buzz Lightyear, with scenarios of what people say in a reaction or a commentary coming back to a request to relocate.
Right.
But legally, yes or no, if you're married and there is a divorce action either pending or finalized, can you relocate without the permission of the other spouse or former spouse?
No. You have to go through the notice and consent.
If you are married in the state of Florida and you're separated, but nothing has been filed in the state court system, and no other court actions are pending regarding those children, like a support action with the Department of Revenue, can you relocate without permission?
No.
All right. Now I'm going to give you a little bit of a curveball here. You're on a board exam here, Robert.
Curveball. Love curveballs.
Two people have a child out of wedlock. There is no court actions. There's no Department of Revenue child support actions at all. Lady comes to you and says,
yes.
Mr. Salama, I want to go to Washington State.
Yes.
Is that, yes, I can move?
Yes, you can move.
Do I have to ask for permission?
No, he's now established paternity as a matter of law.
Now, did y'all hear that? If you are a man or a woman, y'all have a child out of wedlock. This goes for our military service members especially. You have a child, or your wife or significant other is giving birth to a child, and you're about to go underway. I implore you to file a paternity action prior to leaving, because you will then safeguard the other spouse from relocating outside of the state of Florida without your knowledge and without court's permission.
Which they will do both, because I'm telling you, as the time rolls in, and you get to that place, you're out at sea, you're gone, maybe you're in communication, maybe you aren't, and the next thing you know, they can pick up, they can move, and it creates all kinds of problems, particularly where you may have no one residing in the state of Florida anymore.
That's right.
Which gets into a whole new situation.
And once you leave the state of Florida with the child and you're out at sea for 6 or 8 months, then the other jurisdiction can what with that child?
Home state. But I mean, if you, here's the danger and why David's advice is smart. If by filing a suit in the state of Florida, Florida has jurisdiction and maintains jurisdiction until they relinquish jurisdiction, you can end up in a situation where no state has jurisdiction. So the state that started is the one that will maintain it, because the other states may or may not be able to acquire what we call in personam jurisdiction. For example, you leave Florida, the one with the child, and you go to Nevada. He's never been to Nevada. He doesn't live in Nevada. He was living in Florida. But when he comes back from deployment, he goes to Georgia.
It's kind of like the home field advantage, right?
Sure is.
And we're Jag fans, right?
Absolutely.
Sometimes our home field doesn't give us all the advantages. We know in the West Coast we don't have very much advantage out there, but you always want to be in the legal system.
It better be when they come home, Jaguars, because I'm getting tickets for that game.
We got to take it down. If you want to call us, call 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-TALK.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently, the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Welcome back to The Lawyer's Edge with Robert Slama and David Trotty. 904-222-TALK is the number if you have any legal question at all. The attorneys are here to answer your questions, and feel free to call in, and you can also email them, and the email addresses are
rjslamalaw@gmail.com. That's rjslamalaw@gmail.com.
And
David@dptrottylaw.com.
Okay, very interesting question about homesteading. We're learning all types of new things when it comes to paternity and parental rights. Have you ever heard of a you guys mentioned that you have to have the consent of the other, I guess, non-primary custodial parent if you want to move 50 miles away.
As the crow flies.
As the crow flies.
And no one knows what that is. I always wanted to bring in for evidence as an expert to say, which way does your crow fly?
Well, I have a crow that's in a cage. Yeah, I let him out and I have a string that's 50 miles long.
Have you ever heard of
a biased crow, obviously.
Well, my question is, have you ever heard of situations where the primary custodial parent wants to move away for a job opportunity, and then the non-custodial parent will use the amount of money being paid in alimony or child support and or both as a bargaining chip to get that reduced as in order to grant permission to move outside the 50-mile range?
Everything is on the table when a parent wants to relocate with the child, everything. And what happens is, I mean, it's not supposed to be. You want to relocate, you're talking about a child time sharing, you're talking about child support modifications. Mm-hmm. But what you can use in negotiating, say you're the spouse receiving child support and you're wanting, alimony, and you're wanting to relocate to Washington State or Virginia.
Nevada,
there you go. But let's say you want to get married to a Navy person and they want to go up to Virginia or out to Washington State, and you're being paid spouse support. Number one, that was kind of a bad example, because if you get married, alimony is going away anyway. But let's say you want to go back home because you can't find a job here in Jacksonville.
Stay with your mom.
You want to go stay with your mom. You can bring up the fact that you're paying alimony and there's going to be additional expense for time sharing. And a lot of times the person who's wanting to leave will negotiate down spousal support for the permission to relocate with the child. So
the child support doesn't go down, but the alimony can.
Child support can go up or down.
Really? Okay.
Because your time sharing changes. Like we were saying earlier, let's say you had a 50-50 time sharing plan in Jacksonville. One spouse wants to move to Virginia to be with the parents. The time sharing is not going to be 50-50 anymore.
Right. Okay, we've got a call on the line. You guys want to take a call? We have Mia on the line. Is it Mia or Amaya?
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What's your question for Robert and David?
Okay, here's my question. I would like to know that what if I am separated, okay, and the non-custodial parent move out of state, and I later on decide to leave the state while we are separated. Can I move without? Yes.
Are you currently married?
Still, yes.
Okay, so you're currently married, and there's no court action pending?
No.
Okay. So what state did he move to?
Pennsylvania.
And how long?
A year ago.
What do you think, Robert?
That's desertion, isn't it?
I don't know.
You guys are the lawyers.
It's not a desertion.
Article 32 inquiry. We're going to figure this out.
I would say she'd be able to move. I still think if there is a pending court action, I still think you have to get permission of the state because there's a pending action. I'm going to presume here in the area. But if there wasn't a pending action, I would say go ahead and move. But since there's a pending action, I still think you have to get the permission of the other spouse and or by order of the court.
Oh, absolutely. If there is pending.
Mm-hmm. The question I also have is actually, I'm originally from Europe. What if I wanted to move to Europe back to my country?
I think it's the same thing.
Do I have to ask permission?
Of course you do. Of course you do. I think you have to get, again, a lot of issues. We deal with that as well, especially with the Navy town. A lot of soldiers and sailors, we have foreign spouses, and they want to go back home because now the spouse is in the service. He's going to Washington State, Pennsylvania, or wherever. He's not here. He's left the foreign spouse with no support system or no family network. So they typically want to go back to Europe or back to Japan or wherever and be with their family to help support the child. It's the same study. You have to do the best interest of the child, the contact with the other spouse, and you have to get permission from the spouse. If you don't get permission from the spouse, you have to get permission from the court.
You could also trigger, depending upon how this is done, that's why it's always best to do the notice, because some people will just lay down on the notice and let the 30 days expire. Then you attach that to your petition, file it, and then seek an order from the court. But the various conventions, like the Hague Convention, come into play. You could have issues that end up getting people in jail. I've seen it happen myself, where someone took off without notice, and you know the judges look... It's not your dealings anymore with him or her. Once you file, it's your dealings with the court. And that's the same as if the court said to you, hey, do this, and you said, well, I don't think so. I got my own plans.
That's right.
So it can turn into a very nasty lockup, sanctions, losing time sharing. But the best way to always play it is, I always say, because it usually works itself out anyway if you do it right. You send the notice. If he responds and objects... You file, you know, you have it heard by a judge. And if your purpose is one that is the usual type of stuff, you're leaving because of a job, you're leaving because of what I call a valid reason, not just to minimize his visitation, the court is almost always going to bless it. And once they bless it and you get an order, off you go. Then I say you figure out, as part of the plan, you figure out all the rest of the stuff, like who's paying for transport, visitation schedule, money. But if you haven't filed anything and he hasn't filed anything, let's say he's in Georgia and you go to Nevada because you like to listen to concerts and see all the fun stuff on the strip. Now no one is left in Florida, but the last place that you were as man and wife was in the state of Florida, whatever county, Seminole, Orange, Flagler. So you're separating two separate things. Who has jurisdiction in what we call in personam, or over the people, to hear certain things aside from divorcing? So for a lot of people, my suggestion normally is, instead of creating possibly jurisdictional nightmares later after you move, just get it all handled, wrap it up in a ball, get it done. Then you're more or less free. But the idea, what a lot of folks are after, is, well, I just don't really want to deal with him anymore, or he's saying, I really just don't want to deal with her anymore. And David's smiling because he's heard it too. As long as there are kids involved, you're always going to have to deal with that person until they reach the age of majority. And believe it or not, college and post matriculation, they tend to see more of each other than they do at weddings, funerals, and all this stuff.
They come back.
They come back more than they do when they're in high school. So anyway... That's my suggestion, but definitely you want to take a look at that before you make any move, because the wrong move can cost you greatly.
And like always, hopefully you already have an attorney involved. If you don't have an attorney, seek the advice of competent counsel. And if you go to a counsel that says, guaranteed you're going to be able to move, go to the next counsel.
Run as fast as you can. Anytime they guarantee.
All right, Maya, thank you for calling in. Great question. All right, I got a couple of questions to kind of tack onto hers. if she happens to be, or someone in her similar situation happens to be, a stay-at-home wife, has never worked in America, maybe doesn't even have a green card to work in America, and doesn't have the income, who's going to pay her legal fees? Is the husband required to pay them?
It depends.
It depends.
That's the lawyer answer. But the truth is, there's only two ways you get fees: by statute or by contract, if there is a contract. Here, where there's disparity of income, the court can assess it, but it's committed to the sound discretion of the trial court in order to do that.
Okay. I'm going to throw a curveball on you.
Yes.
Okay.
Or bad faith litigation.
And I have another question, too, after David's.
Is the question was proffered as the lady never worked, stay-at-home mom, stay-at-home wife, doesn't even have a green card.
Yeah.
So we're going to presume for this fact pattern that the spouse is the sponsor, right?
Okay.
So now...
Now we're talking a whole other area of law, now, immigration law.
Robert hit on something. This is something that is routinely missed, especially here in Jacksonville. We have a big immigration population here in Jacksonville that are married. A lot of it stems from our military servicemen and women. But do you have an obligation under that contract, the sponsorship contract, to support that sponsoree?
Well, it
depends.
It depends. I'm actually going to say there is a part on that contract to sponsor an immigrant over. You actually are taking on the financial responsibility of that person, whether or not you're married. So if you get a divorce, the responsibility continues on.
Now, and with my fee request, one of the first things you're noting is that they have the responsibility to care for them. The problem is, here we go. We're getting into legal niceties. Someone might say that has nothing to do with their care, the legal thing, because you always can represent yourself pro se. So if I'm representing him, the first thing I'm pointing out is, she has a desire to have access to legal services, which the court is supposed to be interested in, right? That both parties have access to legal services, but they're more likely to try to send her out to legal aid or find someone pro bono to help her, depending upon if the judge will give you money and require a contribution.
Of course. And, of course, you also have the big two is once the court establishes – okay, let me just start here. Just because you go to court and you're filing for a divorce against somebody doesn't mean you're entitled to fees, okay? You have to have a need for the fees, okay, unless it's a contract.
Right.
But typically you start in and you're on equal footing, so you ask – court, give me fees. The court's going to say, do you have a need? You say, yes, I have a need. A lot of attorneys say, okay, I win. We're going to get our attorney fees. And they fail to establish that the other party has what, Robert?
Need. And the ability to pay.
The ability to pay.
Okay.
So I have the need, but the other party has to have the ability.
Okay, second question. Okay, Johnny, who's in the Navy, meets Maria in Italy when he's deployed overseas. They get married, have a little kid, come back to Florida, and then things don't work out. And she wants to go back to Italy to spend, to help raise the kid with her parents. Does the enforcement of child support and alimony go away because she's moved overseas?
No. But first, she's got to get out of here to go overseas. And in your example, are there kids?
Yes.
Yeah. They're tied to life for a while. In other words, if the desire is for her to move and want to go back to Italy, you still got to work out all of the children's issues. But in terms of the ongoing support, after she moves and she goes to Italy, what her resources are, all that stuff is all going to be part of the child support calculation, potentially alimony.
But once we get into mediation, everything is on the table for negotiations. You might be you might be fit the criteria for alimony, but wanting to go overseas with the child might do away with the alimony claim.
Absolutely. And the bidding, everything is, I sound like Donald Trump, right? Everything is negotiable. The art of the deal. It's going to be huge. Thanks for listening.
Happy New Year.
Okay. Tune in again to The Lawyer's Edge with David Trotty and Robert Slama. We're here for you.